Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is Tuesday afternoon. It's a gorgeous day. And it's a week. 1 week. Until the election. Oh, the election of all time. You know, this election goes the wrong way. We have Hitler in the White House and Nazis marching through the streets. And internment camps. And forced eyebrow removal and torture and dogs and cats living together. And it's like, oh, just shut up already. We got it. You're desperate. Believe me, there's not a single solitary person who missed that part of your plea. You're desperate. I forget what the name of the policy is. Jerem, you probably know it. You're a brilliant young man. And you know, Jeremy actually produces not one but two award-winning shows. That's true. I mean, during the week, he's stuck with me. And then on Saturdays, he produces for Sam Newsman, the most reliable puppet in media. The guy's been reporting since Roswell. But anyway, Jerem, what is the name of that thing? There is some professor, I think, somewhere. No, not Larry Sabato. Larry Sabato, of course, simply heads up the Larry Sabato Center for the shameless promotion of Larry Sabato and should be immediately dismissed from the University of Virginia. $500,000 for him to stand around and tell me that I'm a Nazi because I support Donald Trump. Tell that to my family members who died at the hands of the actual Nazis, you absolute clown, you. What a vile person that Sabato is. Anyway, I'm sorry, I digressed. I went off, it was like, you know, I saw a squirrel, something shiny, and we're off to the races. Now, Jerem, what is that thing? There's somebody, I think it's a professor, who came up with this rule that says if you invoke Adolf Hitler or you mention the Nazis in an argument, in a debate, you've lost. And it's the something rule, and I don't remember what it is, but it's a thing. I didn't make it up. It's not the Katz rule. It's not the Jeff rule. I don't know what it is, but, well, anyway, we'll find out. But you know what I'm saying, right? There is somebody who came up with this thing that says if you invoke Adolf Hitler, you're not actually talking about Adolf Hitler, you've lost. If you invoke the Nazis and you're not actually discussing Nazis, and I don't mean those Illinois Nazis that come out for the Blue Brothers, I mean actual Nazis, then you have lost that discussion. The Democrats have lost this debate. They lost complete and total control of it a long time ago. They are now at the point of fear-mongering and absolutely outrageous fear-mongering. They have folks like the Sabato character, who, by the way, is busy blocking people. Is he allowed to block people? Like, I can block people. If you annoy me on X, I can block you. I know that. Why? Work. It's because she's absolutely abysmal, and she is afraid, perhaps, that she's going to say something that, I don't know, accidentally, inadvertently reveals who she really is. She's a Marxist. I mean, she's a hardcore Marxist, and she's a revolutionary, and you've got people who are pointing out that with all of that, she's absolutely not ready for primetime. Now, I've joked about that she's been our not ready for primetime vice president ever since she somehow, some way fell into the role of vice president. But I got news for you. All of that being said, if she wasn't ready for primetime as vice president, she sure as heck is not ready for primetime here. But they stage this coup. They push poor old Uncle Joe right off the cliff. And we've got her. Or you've got her. Or, well, they chose her. It's not like I'm voting for her. There's no danger of that. And the more that I am told by folks like Sabato that I am somehow a Nazi because I support President Trump, the more offended and disgusted I absolutely am. And I want to know how Larry Sabato is allowed to block people. Once again, there's a distinction. If you are over on X and you don't like something somebody's saying to you, you can block them, right? You're just a regular person. Good place to be, just a regular person. You're not a government employee. And if you are a government employee like Larry Sabato, I do believe that there's some sort of legal requirements about having social media channels available. Wasn't there something, I want to say that it was former President Trump, because everything seems to be directed at him in a negative way, but I don't think it was. I do think it was somebody else, and somebody in some position of power, some public figure like that, a government employee, blocked someone, and then they were held to account. They couldn't do it. I don't know. I know I've raised the issue, and I probably should know the answer, but I don't know the answer. Yeah. I don't. Oh, Godwin's Law. Yes, yes, yes. Godwin's Law. Thank you. I am looking at the Chronic Care of Richmond text line, 833-804-1140, 833-804-1140. Godwin's Law. Yes, that is exactly correct. 804 says, Jeff, it sounds like Sabato has just silenced you. Well, I don't think so. I'm here. Make no mistake about it. Yep. Mm-hmm. 804, Jeff, SCOTUS demanded that the prosecution provide his evidence in this ridiculous illegal alien voting lawsuit by 3 p.m. today. Any word? No. We're waiting to hear what's happened. Governor Youngkin and Attorney General Meares have asked for Supreme Court to step in and say, you can't force us to keep non-citizens on the voting rolls. And remember something about this. The reality is that these people who were taken off the voting rolls themselves said they were not citizens. This is not somebody from the Commonwealth going out and saying, well, I want to see this, I want to see this, I want to see. These are people themselves. They went in, they got their driver's license. Somehow, some way, they get registered to vote, and at the same time they're getting registered to vote, they're saying, no, I'm not a citizen. So they shouldn't have been registered to vote in the first place. They haven't lost anything. We haven't lost anything. The only people who are in fear that something is being lost are those who are trying everything to cook the books on the election. That's the problem. That is the problem. Now we'll see what happens. So Michael Harris is going to be here. He's going to be here at 3:35. We're going to be talking about the Joe Rogan experience. Joe Rogan has now said, amongst other things, he is not traveling to interview Kamala Harris. Unlike Donald Trump, who was able to find Joe Rogan's studio, sit down, have a conversation, do whatever was required, Kamala Harris says, no, you must come to me. And you can't, we are not going to do any more than an hour. And Joe Rogan said, it's not worth my trouble. Not worth my trouble. I don't want to travel to wherever you are. I don't want to go through the hassle of getting equipment to be where you are. And my show runs a couple of hours. So if you're going to do it, you got to do it. Now, the last part is the one that I side with her. I really do. It's very rare that you say to someone, you have to spend hours and hours and hours on this program, right? I don't know that anybody's ever been able to do that effectively in the past, but then I don't know that anybody's wanted to do it. I don't know that Joe Rogan really wants to spend 2 or 3 hours with Kamala Harris, but it's a great point of delineation between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, isn't it? Donald Trump's like, yeah, I got the morning cleared, whatever you want to do. I'm here. I'm yours. Let's hang. Kamala Harris says, I got other stuff to do. Now, I don't believe her when she says she has other stuff to do, but I know her staff is in fear. Oh, they're terrified that she might accidentally, inadvertently say something that, you know, she hadn't rehearsed and sort of shaped in front of a group, a focus group situation. So Michael Harrison will be here at 3:35. Our buddy Craig Peterson is going to be here. I've got some terrible news for him. I really do. He's going to be shocked. I had this big event in Chicago last week, as you know. I was a guest speaker, featured speaker, which was wonderful, but it was also in addition to the speaking. There was a workshopping component that was really valuable to me. And, well, I'm told I have to go to the dark side, but I got to get some Apple stuff. And we'll also talk about, are you ready for this? The Christian Chamber of Commerce. I ran into a wonderful couple out at Liberty University. I was there for Dave Bratt's event, the CEO Summit, a couple of weeks back, and they had up the Christian Chamber of Commerce out in Virginia Beach. They're going to talk to us about it, and who knows? We'll get one here in Central Virginia. I think it sounds like a marvelous organization. I really do. It is 316, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. .321, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Michael Harrison's going to be along at 3:35. Michael is the publisher of Talkers Magazine and an incredible publication, truly the Bible of talk radio. And he's going to be with us at 3:35 because I want to talk about the Joe Rogan experience. I want to talk about what Rogan is bringing to this and what it says when Joe Rogan can say to Kamala Harris, the sitting vice president, hey, you know what? I'm not interested in traveling to meet with you. I'm not going to reconfigure my life so that I can get you on my show. I think it's incredible. I really do. I think it's wonderful. But it's something that is a little bit new. You know, you can see it. Let me explain this to you. I see it sometimes inside of the smaller market talk radio stations. And that's what we are. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. It's not a major market. And so what happens, people get all worked up into a lather and they say, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm going to get, I don't know, I'm going to have the governor, lieutenant governor, this, you know, the guy who's from on Fox News is going to be on the show. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And you go like, hey, relax, chill out. Every one of those people that you've just mentioned needs you more than you need them. That's a terrible thing to say, I suppose, but it's completely and totally honest. Completely and totally honest. So there are some people get all excited, oh my God, I got this politician or that politician. It's like, hey, they're looking for votes. They need you more than you need them. The folks who get all excited, oh my God, I got this guy, that's the national guy from Fox. It's like, well, believe me when I tell you, he needs you. He absolutely needs you. Now, having said that, let me remind you that Bill O'Reilly and Dinesh D'Souza will be joining us on Monday. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. No, but they will. I mean, which I love. I love O'Reilly, as you know. I used to be a regular on the Factor on Fox when I was in San Francisco. So, I mean, that's always cool. I love O'Reilly. I think O'Reilly is just one of those sorts of guys. You love talking to him. You love hearing what he has to say. And he doesn't do very many local radio shows. He does this one, as you know. Why? It doesn't have anything to do with what I just said. It's because we actually known each other for 30-some-odd years. Dinesh D'Souza is going to be with us on Monday as well. I actually am very excited about that because I think D'Souza has got some insight that the vast majority of people do not. So I think that is good stuff. Michael Harrison will offer his insight on the Joe Rogan situation, and I'd love to hear what you're thinking about it as well. Let me remind you real fast about the Chronic Care of Richmond. Text line 833-804-1140, 833-804-1140. You send it, I may or may not read it. I'm not reading everything. Some of the stuff is just downright silly, and some of it is brilliant. I'm hoping yours is more the latter than the former. 833-804-1140, the Chronic Care of Richmond. Text line 326, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. I am always nice to the robots. Our future robot overlords are going to be just...
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Just fine. They are. Just ask them. It's 3:36, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Now, I want to remind you about some of the great folks who are going to be dropping by over the next couple of days, calling in some chits on some old friends. We got Chris Ruddy, who has built Newsmax to just epic proportions, but he's had a long-standing personal relationship with President Trump, so Chris Ruddy is going to be with us tomorrow, the next day. We've got Bill O'Reilly, who's dropping by, Dinesh D'Souza. We got one or two good folks. None of them compare to Michael Harrison, but they're not bad folks. Michael Harrison, I've shared this with you before. Michael and I have been friends. We did the math. It's 3 decades plus. It's like 33 years. Michael is truly one of the best broadcasters I've ever known. One of the most talented guys. Could have been the king in the talk radio realm, and instead said, you know what? I'm going to be the guy who legitimizes talk radio in the right way. I'm going to be the guy who creates the trade publication, the Bible of talk radio, Talkers Magazine, which is what he's done. And I wanted to bring him on to not blow smoke and tell him how great he is. I could do that off the air. I wanted to talk to him about Joe Rogan and what's going on there. Michael, thank you for being here, man.
It's great to be with you, Jeff, and always thank you for the kind introductions. You're very, very generous.
I think the world of you, but you knew that. I want to know what you're thinking about the Joe Rogan experience and what's happened here with President Trump spending 3 hours and Joe Rogan saying, you know what, I don't really want to be bothered traveling to meet with the vice president. This is a very new world we're in, man.
It's a very new world. It's been building for a very long time. As a matter of fact, you know, I've been talking about this new world for decades, mm-hmm. As if it were right around the corner. So it isn't that this snuck up on me or you or people in the know about media and how it's evolving overnight. Yeah. But it occurred to me, and I wrote about it in Talkers the other day and got a lot of response to it. It occurred to me that this Joe Rogan Experience podcast that former President Trump went on for 3 hours, to the detriment of a crowd of thousands of people at a rally waiting several hours through the air away from him. You know, he made them wait for 3 hours because this podcast was so important to him. Yeah. And the amount of coverage that it got in the news and the level of irreverence that yes. Joe Rogan showed him in terms of the language he used, in terms of the direct questions that he asked and his subtle passive-aggressive commentary that Trump didn't even know that in some cases Rogan was toying with him, indicated to me that we have arrived at the tipping point when we can no longer think of podcasts and we can no longer think of online or alternative media or underground media or grassroots media as being that at all. Collectively, there's a new mainstream. The networks, the big newspapers, the big television companies, they do not have a monopoly on the big time anymore. There are individual pockets of big time, such as Joe Rogan, right, and many others like that. And collectively, the alternative is bigger in many ways from a standpoint of credibility, influencers, yep, and impact than a lot of the kind of plastic, phony, mainstream, legacy, I'm using these terms with imaginary quotes around them, media. Yeah. Would you agree that we're in a new territory right now when it comes to the categorization of media venues?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, totally. Totally. We're seeing not just the emergence of those on this side of the camera, this side of the microphone. We're seeing an entire collection of public figures who grew up with what you and I talk of as talk radio. Look, every time I see J.D. Vance sparring with one of those plastic caricatures on the CNN or the MSNBCs, mm-hmm, or wherever it is, ABC, I think you grew up listening to Rush Limbaugh. You honed your craft as a talker, as a presenter, by listening to the greats of talk radio. And I think we've just seen this total blossoming on both sides.
No doubt about it. As a matter of fact, I think that Donald Trump, was influenced by radio personalities to the point that he's the first shock president.
Yes.
That a case could be made that Trump is the media result of an evolution that included people like Don Imus, yep. Howard Stern, yep. Rush Limbaugh, Joe Pine.
Yes.
You want to go all the way back?
Yeah.
Froggy the Gremlin on Andy's Gang. I mean, seriously, I don't know if that reference resonated with you. You may not have grown up where I did, but there was a kiddie show where there was this impish frog that used to make fun of serious adults when they were talking to the kids and put words in their mouth and go, ha, ha, ha. There's a stick it in your eye kind of attitude.
Yep.
And I think that Trump, part of his success as a politician in terms of his election to the highest office and his pertinence in our society for a decade now, beyond his media dabblings before, I think a lot of it comes from what you're talking about, growing up with this emerging new media that now has changed the norms in America on every level, including the language that we use in public discourse.
Yeah, you know, and let me remind everybody, Michael Harrison is joining me. Michael is the publisher of Talkers, which is the Bible of talk radio and every sort of spoken word, whether it's behind a microphone or in a camera, is it a podcast, is the rest of it. You're right. Look, there would not be a Donald Trump were there not a Bob Grant. There would not be Donald Trump in this way were it not for the fact that he used to be a regular with Howard Stern, the same Howard Stern who now thinks he's, like, I don't know, the Antichrist or something, won't even utter his name, you know, like he's Voldemort. It is bizarre. But like you, I am a little concerned about the language, right? Those of us who are on the traditional radio outlets, we have these words we don't say and blah, 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 blah. There's no filter on some of the other stuff. And I don't know, I'm going to ask you, is that good, bad, or indifferent?
It's natural. Language is organic and language changes. All the way back to ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics, they read about people bemoaning the fact that young people don't speak politely. And you and I, you know, both have been in radio long enough to know that certain words, certain song titles over the years were considered to be iffy, like, can I get away with playing the B word by the Stones, or the B is back by Elton John?
That's
or,
right.
You know, or if you remember a long time ago when you were a kid, if the word hell came up or damn, they would have another word that rhymed with it and
that's
play
right.
out. And so I'm not that concerned from a standpoint of being a moralist about words. I find it to be natural, and I'm always interested in which words replace other words. We need dirty words. If we don't have taboo words, then we lose one of the colors on the palette of our communication. But I don't think that any word is inherently evil. It's the intent behind it. But just the fact that it's happening so quickly and so dramatically, you take a pop cultural chronicler like me. I'm a you know, compulsive chronicler. I'm constantly commenting on categories and changes and these things, and I'm finding it to be just overwhelmingly an abundance of riches in terms of things to talk about and comment on. Things are changing that drastically.
Yeah, you are, as per usual, spot on. You know, you mentioned about the Joe Rogan Donald Trump interaction, where there were some parts that it didn't seem like President Trump knew or appreciated that Rogan was kind of ribbing him a little bit.
Yes, he didn't know. Trump's ego is so big that it's hard for him, and he's so used to people yesing him, and his you know, when you're president or a past president or a big shot like Trump, you surround yourself with yes men, and they tell you what you want to hear, and you get used to that.
Yeah.
And you can't always tell when you venture away from that safety zone that people might be making fun of you. I've seen a few podcasts that Trump has been on where the podcasters were laughing in his face, and he did not realize that they were laughing at him, not with him.
Yeah.
So you know, when you have a gigantic ego, and this is not a political statement about Trump, it's just an observation about his nature.
Right.
When you have a gigantic ego, You can be fooled very easily by people who play you. And I
don't
see that
let all the secrets out of the bag, Michael.
Well, not you. You don't. No, you're one of the most humble people I know. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you tend to think that everybody just loves you.
Right.
But Rogan is a very talented guy. Now, you know, he's into that current thing, you know, where he looks like a slob and he's got a couple of doofuses on the, I shouldn't say that, but I don't even know who they are. But
right.
He has his guys, you know, and they sit around and they're cronies, you know, what's it like, bro talk.
Yep.
and all that stuff. It's a genre.
Exactly.
You know, it's funny. You see a former president of the United States in his suit and his tie sitting there talking to them, and you don't know who's doing whom. It's, you know, maybe Trump thinks he's patronizing Rogan. The dynamic, Jeff, is fascinating.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Everybody is BSing everybody else.
Yeah.
I hope I can say that on your show.
You can. You just did. Now I had this little frog pop up, and I'm very, very upset about what you just said. Now, think for a second, Michael. You've got Donald Trump who ventures in there. Donald Trump, if he wanted to, I think, could have probably pulled off the baseball cap backwards if he wanted to give that a shot. He probably could have done the whole shtick. But what about the comparison with the vice president? Now, she, whether you like her politics, dislike her politics, I'm not talking politics here. I think she is one of the least capable communicators I have ever seen on a national stage. I mean, I cringe every time she opens her mouth. I think she's appalling, and I can't even begin to imagine that she could spend 3 minutes, let alone 3 hours, with Joe Rogan.
Well, she might pull a surprise out of her hat, you know, or something, and so sometimes she surprises me. I've gone through many different reactions to her over the years,
right,
in terms of her public speaking ability. I mean, there are a lot of people who just don't think she's a very good presenter.
Yeah.
And then there are a lot of people who think that both Joe Biden and Donald Trump are in cognitive decline. I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, so I can take this conversation in many directions, play devil's advocate with you,
mm-hmm,
or just simply say, should there be a separate standard for Kamala Harris than there is for Donald Trump? Does she have to be perfect and he gets away with being imperfect because that's what he does? And how dare her try to take away his birthright to be president again? I mean, there's so many angles on this.
And let's not kid ourselves. He is, in many ways, at different times, and certainly throughout his, I don't know, 40, 50 years in public life, there have been moments where you're thinking, oh, he's the poster child for imperfect. I mean, he's not even just, you know, imperfect. He is the poster child for imperfection. But he somehow, Michael, he's made it work. He's embraced so many areas that ordinarily you have been told throughout the years, this particular segment of America doesn't play nicely with this particular segment of America. I think he's done very well at that. I'm curious, when you look into the future, right? We're going to get through this election in the next week. It's going to be done and we can move on with life, which means we start the next election cycle. Do you see Rogan once again playing a major role? Are people going to get his importance long before these guys did?
I think that Joe Rogan, if he stays on the trajectory that he's on, he is the next Rush Limbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
I think he already is. I think that he is the biggest star in talk media. And I have difficulty on a certain level. I'll be very candid.
Yeah.
I have problems dealing with that because I'm radio centric.
Yeah.
As a trade magazine publisher and a spokesperson for parts of the industry, and we do talk media, it's all under our umbrella, but I have a very soft spot in my heart for the institution of radio and radio stations, licensed stations, on air, AM,
yeah,
FM. I like that as the center of my wheel.
Right.
And you get a guy like Rogan, you get these guys with these podcasts that have 20, 30, 40 million people listening to them, numbers that used to be for, you know, I Love Lucy.
Right.
And the networks can't get those numbers. I find that to be, you know, a little bit you know, it's alarming from a standpoint of my own cultural traditions. But objectively speaking, no. This is the new world. This is the new way. In terms of Trump, I don't think the book of Trump has been written yet. I think that he faces a lot of perils going forward, whether he gets elected or doesn't. Oh, either way, I think that he is a historic lightning rod, and he is the most famous person in the world at a time when it's dangerous to be famous. And I don't mean physically. I'm just talking about on so many levels. Yeah. And as far as Kamala Harris is concerned, you know, she's in the crossfire right now, a very polarized world, and people are attacking her. But I sometimes like to step back objectively and say, well, she may not be that good a communicator, and you may think she's a low IQ person, and you may think that she has an empty head, but she has been a district attorney, she has been an attorney general, she has been a senator, she has been vice president, and damn, I've never done anything quite like that. So who the hell am I to judge her?
Wait a minute, Harris. I'm going to say exactly who you are. You have spent decades making sure the talk radio was regarded with some degree of respect and decency and honor. You have been the keeper of the trade publication for our industry. So, no, you haven't been vice president of the United States. You've been busy doing important stuff, for God's sake.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your bolstering my sagging confidence. But one other thing, let me squeeze this in, because I know the clock is ticking and you're running a show. One of the problems radio faces today is that the smallest little AM radio station with a small signal and a small audience still is regulated by the Federal Communications Commission, and it's harder for somebody to buy a station like that than it was for Elon Musk to write a check and take control of one of the most powerful communications platforms in the history of the world. And there is such an imbalance in terms of, you know, like Limbaugh used to say, you know, with half of my brain tied behind my back, the radio broadcasting community has its hands tied behind its back because it's still regulated by the government, whereas somebody like Joe Rogan is completely unregulated. Not that I'm saying he should be regulated, but I'm pointing out to you the imbalance of power between this new media and the old media that, as much as we may love it and still doing it, and it's still vital and it's still important, is part of the receding 20th century.
It is. Michael, I always appreciate you making time for us, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I love what you've done for this business. I love the fact that you can squeeze us in every once in a while to talk about some stuff. And
anytime.
As always, you're spot on. And be nice to the robots. I know the AI's not taking our place, but you still got to be nice to the robots, all right?
Definitely. Thank you so much, Jeff. Be well and best to all of your listeners. Thank you all.
My friend. That is Michael Harrison. Nobody better. He is he's one of the biggest names that you may not have heard of in talk radio. And talk radio has only been successful as a result of what Michael Harrison and Talkers has been able to do through the years. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll off.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.